Blog Talk Radio.
This is Brenneman Airplane, a Wednesday edition on XXPN Raleigh Durham. No Colta Gracie tonight, so this is a solo show. We've got 45 minutes, or 44 minutes, because I couldn't get the music to shut off. Joining me, just back from the frigid Twin Cities, is Renegade Evolution, who just came off with a co-presentation, I guess you could call it a debate of sorts with anti-porn quote-unquote expert Robert Jensen. I think he's a doctor or something, or he calls himself that. Renegade Evolution, welcome back.
Hey. I think I finally thawed.
Have you thawed from the frozen tundra?
I think I have thawed from the frozen tundra.
Well, it gives new meaning to reasons for Dome Stadium.
Yeah, seriously, now I know why the Vikings play inside. It makes complete sense to me now. Yeah.
Does the Minnesota accent make sense to you yet?
I'm in love with the Minnesota accent, but it's contagious. It's absolutely contagious. I was talking as a Minnesotan for the first 2 days after I returned home. I think it's finally gone away, though.
Real heavy on the O's? And
right.
Did you ever order a salad?
No, I didn't.
I should have told you to order a salad. That makes a salad in itself is an experience in Minnesota. They have a real thing about dressing and how dressing goes there.
Ah. Well, next time I happen to be up there, I will make a point to order a salad.
Order a salad and then wait till they ask you how you want your dressing. And that's a complex question in Minnesota.
Cool.
So Bob Jensen.
Yes.
For the audience, who is Bob Jensen?
He is a professor of journalism, I believe, at the University of Texas, and he has written many, many articles and a book or two, I think, about pornography and the effect that it has on society and men. And he also, I believe, he is a feminist and looks at all of these things through the radical feminist lens, as it would be termed, I suppose.
Maybe he needs corrective lenses.
I don't know, but that's the way he rolls, and so that kind of makes him my diametric opposite in every way. So it was interesting.
Now I've never met Robert Jensen before. I know of him peripherally. I don't know him, but I know that he thinks quite highly of his own feminism.
Well, he makes a very careful point, I think. I mean, he makes a very careful distinction to always say that, you know, when considering feminism, it's more, in doing your reading and stuff, to check out, like the holy trinity of you know, Dworkin, McKinnon, and who was the other one you mentioned? Farley, I guess. He's building off of what, the foundations that they have laid. I mean, he does not take credit for being a big name or a big mover and shaker. He's actually very good about that, and the fact that he is, the work he does is built off the work that others before him have done or others alongside him have done, and he doesn't take credit for that as his. He is very good about that. Credit where it's due. I'll give him that.
No. What exactly, you spoke at Augsburg University, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Or Augsburg College, I guess it's college.
College, yeah.
What exactly was the presentation?
Well, we started off, there is a film out right now called The Price of Pleasure, and it was originally billed as a fair and honest, or honest and unbiased look at modern pornography. And it has been pointed out that it's an anti-porn film. So there's sort of, at least in the advertising or the marketing of it, changing that a little bit, because there's been quite a stink about the fact that it is not honest and non-judgmental look at mainstream porn. But it's a film that Jensen consulted on, and while not a maker of the film, he was a consultant, and he is in it fairly liberally. And it has been touring various academic institutions throughout the United States since its release. And it was going to be shown at Augsburg, and the women's studies professor there, who is a neat lady that I happen to know from Blog World, was, you know, sure, we'll show this movie, but we want someone from the other side to come in and speak on it as well. And yeah, imagine that, my name popped up. So that's how it all happened. But so we watched the film. There was, you know, a decent-sized audience there from Augsburg and a couple other colleges, and it was, you know, jointly presented by Women's Studies and Journalism Department and all that sort of thing. So we watched the film. Bob introduced the film, then we watched the film, and then I got to make sort of a rebuttal statement to the film, and then we did, you know, Q&A with the audience mostly. So that's kind of the how it went. That was the order of events at said presentation.
Now, what was your position in comparison to Robert Jensen's?
Well, I think that when I die on my tombstone, or perhaps as a tattoo, I need to get the phrase, "The First Amendment is not a suggestion." I'm very much about free speech, and as a person who not only watches but makes porn, I think adults have a right to view and make it. And I do not think it is, you know, inherently or necessarily degrading or exploitive to women. I think it can be, but I don't think it necessarily by default is. And I had seen the film before I saw it at the university, so I could go in saying that their claim that it was fair and unbiased was absolute bunk, because it was not in any way what it claimed to be. They did there was a lot of footage from, it claims at the beginning that it's from, you know, top-selling or top-renting porn, mainstream porn movies. Well, a lot of the footage in it is actually from websites, which do not count as mainstream porn films by any stretch of the imagination. All of the footage was either BDSM-related or gonzo pornography, which is the more hardcore, no plotline type of porn. And it was made in 2005, and I know for a fact that the top-selling porn movie of all time was, and of 2005, was a humongous high-budget feature with a plot, with a story filled with extremely highly paid contract performers, and it is not even mentioned at all in this film. I mean, there's not a single feature film in the entire movie. So to say that it's, you know, a fair and unbiased look at, you know, modern porn is completely erroneous, because it is not, when it does not include features by companies that are known for features that make a heck of a lot more money than the website footage that they were using. So I did get to point that out.
Out of curiosity, why would they use footage from a website?
I personally think they were trying to, as usual, trying to find the most shocking stuff that they could find. And they even sort of addressed that and then say, well, we went to the AVN list. But, you know, these websites like kink.com and whatnot, they're not on the AVN list. They're not AVN affiliated. These are websites, and that's where the footage came from. They're really just, I mean, and they think that people are not going to question that at all. And I think in a lot of college, you know, where people are being presented this and they only have one side, it's not something anybody would think to ask questions about. I mean, they also showed some stuff that, you know, virtual child porn and bestiality porn, and that is absolutely in no way, shape, or form part of the mainstream porn industry, let alone, you know, just the general kind of porn industry overall. Because, I mean, yeah, there is a lot of porn on the net, but that is not the majority of it. And I think that they figure that nobody is going to question this. And it's a good way to get, you know, the anti-porn message out there, is to use the most shocking horrific stuff that you can find. And if nobody's there to counter that, people are going to believe it.
Now, where did you find the audience, Phil?
I think really it was there was gender-wise. I mean, it was a mixed bunch. There were lots of men and women in attendance, and I think that I'm sure there were several people from both sides that came in with their minds already made up, whether they were more leaning towards my way of thinking or more leaning towards Jensen's way of thinking. But I think there were a lot of people that were somewhere there in the middle who had not really actually formulated an opinion, and I'm not going to say that either one of us, completely solidly changed anybody's mind on anything, but I do know that, there was a lot of discussion afterwards, and there has, from what I understand from the professor, there's been ongoing discussion about it, and people, found interesting points of reference or things to look into from both sides. So I suppose, our job to, our purpose, our goal or whatever of making people think was achieved, I suppose.
What did you find Professor Jensen to be like?
He's rather soft-spoken. He is very polite when engaging people in a forum sort of setting. I was a little off-put by the fact that he would not look me in the eye. Well, he did, a couple times, but in general, he would not, when addressing me, did not look me in the eye. And I personally, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I think I felt as if he was not pleased that I was there. Now, I mean, I don't know if he would have felt differently if it had been a different performer or pornographer or whatever, because it's no secret that I've been very critical of his work. So I don't know if it was because it was me or if it was just because somebody from the other side was there. But yeah, he did not seem real thrilled to have my presence there with him, at least to me.
I know from my own experience with the anti people that they're happy to share the stage as long as it's with themselves.
Well, I mean, he wasn't, outright directly rude to me or, I felt like he brushed me off when we were introduced, but other than that, when we were doing the scene, he wasn't outright rude at all. I mean, he let me speak, and, if questions were directed to me, he didn't try to interrupt. In fact, during the Q&A, I handled most of that. I think it was unusual for these students to have, to be sitting in a room with somebody who does this for a living, speaking for themselves, and I'm sure, I'm not quite what they expected, which is fine. But, I don't know. I think that you're right that sometimes, and I suppose it can be tough if you're going in and, you have a standard speech that you give when you do this presentation or are used to doing it a certain way, and then somebody who's really, really in every way your opposite shows up, that it might throw you off a little bit or whatever if you're used to doing it one way. But, I sort of get the impression just in general that at these sorts of things they do not like to have industry people or sex workers or whatever they're speaking for themselves because it might kind of mess with the agenda they're trying to achieve or set out for people.
Now, was there any drama of the ilk of, say, William and Mary where, for the audience who's not familiar, there was Renegade Evolution was going to speak. Well, she did speak at William and Mary, and there was a lot of...
Right. There absolutely was not, because part of it was after the whole William and Mary mess, I did not mention that I was going to Minnesota. Well, I mentioned I was going to Minnesota, but outside of a very few people, I did not say why. I did not say that I would be attending this event or who else would be there, because I didn't want the whole, you shouldn't go talk to her. She's a homicidal maniac. Ball to get rolling. So people didn't have an opportunity, really. I mean, I didn't announce what I was doing in Minnesota until I was there, at which point it was too late if anybody wanted to rain on the parade. Plus, I think that, it was set up very well. I honestly don't think that Bob would have backed out of showing up, frankly. I mean, he might have. I don't know if, I'm sure that, he'd heard of me before, and there was some concerns because I have been very critical of him, But once the assurance was made that, you know, I was there to discuss the film and speak to people, everything went smoothly. So there was not, no, there was not one iota of the drama that there was with William and Mary.
So no visions of anti-porn people being afraid that you would hit them with a motor vehicle or anything like that.
Right. Well, first of all, I mean, there's no way in heck I could have driven in Minnesota. It's too cold and icy. But I think, you know, people forget, and it was really evident when at this particular event, I'm very small. And, you know, I mean, Robert Jensen is much taller than I am, even when I have heels on. And you know, people might think I'm, you know, intimidating or whatever, but it's just kind of silly if you would have seen, like, the two of us standing there together. I mean, he's probably got, you know, 10 or 11 inches on me. So I don't think anybody was worried about that at all.
Now, did he bring up, say, the film's, did the film violate U.S. 2257?
You know, we that was really artfully dodged on his part. I mean, I mentioned it because somebody asked me a question about, you know, how do you go about making porn legal? And I was like, well, there's consent forms and there's federal law 2257 and all these other things. And that topic was really just generally sort of avoided. We had, you know, we were on a set time schedule. We only had, you know, we had an hour for the film and then an hour for question and answer. And I didn't, you know, I'd been invited there as a guest, and there were people asking questions that they wanted answers to. So that did not become a big issue between he and I. But I did mention it afterwards to people who I was talking to about the fact that there is this law, and, you know, here are these, you know, this movie has porn in it, a whole lot of it, and it does not have the prerequisite 2257 compliance forms. So, who knows? I don't know if that issue will ever be resolved unless the, you know, people in the industry get together with their lawyers and sue them. And then it's, you know, it's a case of 2257 versus fair use. So I have no idea, but it's still a peeve of mine, of course, because it's the whole, I mean, here are all of these women and the men in this porn that are now in this movie that, you know, are not even aware of it. Or, you know, have not consented to it or whatnot. And that just bothers me. It's never going to stop bothering me.
Now, in terms of content, having seen, I don't know if I've seen the same movie. I don't believe I have because I don't remember a whole lot of pictures from websites. The presentation I saw was on a film strip. It was on Slide.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that a lot of the pictures, you know, they certainly depicted the worst, but I don't know that it was as they depicted, you know, as an accurate portrayal of the whole porn industry as a whole.
What they did in this is, I mean, they went through and they picked various clips from various films, and at the viewing, they showed the edited version, which means the genitalia is blurred out. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's porn. It's people having sex in various, you know, ways or forms or whatever. And a lot of it is the rougher edged stuff, you know, with the hair pulling and the, you know, the you know, dirty talk and language and whatnot. And they really made, yeah, I mean, that was the focus of the BDSM porn, you know, with like the spanking and whatnot. That was the focus of what they were doing. I have no doubt in my mind that, I mean, when we first started watching the film, there was the occasional giggle at something that somebody said or whatever. But when it was over, everybody in the room was quiet. And I know for a fact that I'm sure that, you know, there were people in the audience that were disturbed by what they had seen. And I mean, there's porn out there that, you know, is, you know, the gonzo variety or whatnot that, you know, does, it's fairly popular, that some people would find disturbing, absolutely. But no one is actually forcing them to watch it has always sort of been my theory. And to assume that, I think to make people feel guilty for liking that sort of thing, whether it be in their own bedroom or in the pornography that they enjoy watching, it's a very underhanded kind of emotional knee-jerk way to go at it. And then to assume that, you know, people don't, you know, female people especially don't do any of that in their own bedroom, is a little strange to me. So, I mean, you can if you go to the, I think it's the Media Education Foundation, you can actually watch the film online. So, I mean, if you'd like to see it, you can.
I guess one of the questions that I have is if, you know, Bob Jensen and the work that he's trying to achieve, I mean, if they eliminated porn, I don't know that necessarily would eliminate anything other than the filmed depiction of it.
Right. Well, people would still write about it. They'd still, you know, draw pictures of it. They'd still, you know, do it in their own bedrooms. I don't think that eliminating porn, I mean, the concern being that porn, you know, feeds into and plays into and enables, you know, sexism and misogyny and, you know, violence against women. I think, you know, getting rid of the porn industry is not going to stop those things. It's not. It's simply not. I mean, you know, there was all of this stuff before there was porn. There's all of this stuff in cultures where pornography is illegal and is not made. And I think that, you know, it's a good way to, because it is, I mean, it is visual and it is real people and it's right there in your face. It's a good way to gut kick somebody emotionally into, you know, pondering these issues. But there's, you know, people will, you know, there's attempts to, you know, downplay the fact that the performers and the stuff have consented to do it, that it is their job. That the government, or not the government, but the government and the industry together have, you know, gone to great efforts to make sure that there are no underaged people involved in any of this, and that not what you're seeing there is not really indicative of what all there is out there. And, I mean, one of the things that I noticed is that, like, amid all of this BDSM footage, there was not a single scene with a female top or female dominant in any of it. Which within BDSM porn, that's a hugely popular theme, is the dominatrix. Well, there was not a single clip of a dominatrix in any of this. It was all male dominant and female submissives, because that's the message they want to put out there about porn.
What do you feel that they're trying to achieve?
I really think they're trying to get everybody to think that it's just so horrifying that, you know, I mean, and I'm not saying they're necessarily talking about banning or whatever, because I don't think legally right now it would be very hard to get rid of porn. But it's more of the, you should be ashamed of yourself for watching or buying this, and look what it does to women, and look what it does to our children, and that sort of thing. It's almost kind of a moralistic approach, really. I mean, you don't necessarily have to have God involved to have it be a moralistic approach, and that's sort of what it seems like to me. It's like, let's show you the worst stuff we can find and say, this is what's there, and this is how it affects people in and out of the industry, and this is a bad thing, and more people need to be against it, you know? And it's kind of like if enough people go that way, maybe the feeling is that people will stop buying and stop watching it, and then, you know, once the industry is not profitable, it will cease to exist. I don't know. I don't know what the eventual goal is. I don't know what the master plan is, but that's sort of the vibe that I got.
Well, you know, I think as a really perhaps an extreme example, but, you know, I think to the Taliban in Afghanistan, and, I mean, they went to extreme lengths with everything.
Oh, to get rid of, yeah, art, you know, they destroyed the Buddhas and all that other kind of stuff. Whereas, I mean, I do agree in some ways that, you know, I absolutely think that porn is horrible sex education. I've said that a zillion times. But, you know, we don't have good sex education in this country right now. And, you know, kids who are curious about it, they're going to go to the Internet, and that's where the porn lives. I think that it, you know, it wouldn't kill the industry to make it harder for, you know, minors to get their hands on porn. But the assertion that it just keeps getting more violent and more whatever is not the case. I mean, there have been two big recent cases, one being Max Hardcore and one being the extreme porn law in the UK, which is, that's really not the truth. People, the stuff that is the, you know, the worst you can find, the government is stepping in and getting rid of it. I mean, they are bankrupting the people who make it, which that the fastest way to shut down a production company is make sure they have no money, you know, seize all of their assets and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, to me, it does seem to be a very extreme way to go about doing things, and I think there is a lot of you know, attempting to guilt people into, you know, feeling bad about their use of porn. I don't know what, I mean, I don't know what the end-all, be-all goal is. I don't even think they really have, I mean, they want to see the end of the industry. That's what they want to see. They've pretty much said that. I mean, I'm not saying Bob said that specifically, but that seems to be kind of the overriding anti-porn thing is an end to the industry, which, you know, I don't think will ever be done. People will always be making it. It's kind of like if you end the legal regulated industry, what does that leave you with? I mean, that's common thread throughout all of sex work. If you make it illegal, it's still going to be done. It's just going to be done in less safe conditions.
Well, you know, I wonder with the proliferation of you know, technology, how one would even achieve a goal
There's no way you could. I mean, one of the biggest gripes of the industry right now is that, you know, people pirate stuff and it's out on the net and it's all over the place and it's free. I mean, trying to actually get rid of all of it would be a monumental task that would require, you know, several industries and government agencies and years of time to do. And, you know, I don't know if that's something that, you know, the John Q. tax citizen who might actually watch porn is willing to put his money for. But, I mean, effects have happened. I mean, there have a lot of companies that have been dragged into court, and, I mean, the more right-leaning things go, and I know that, you know, feminists hate it when they get compared to the, you know, the conservative right, but it's porn and the sex industry seem to be one of those things that they are, you know, they are in agreement on. And that, you know, that's formidable. It's a formidable alliance to face off because, you know, the government holds, you know, no love for the porn industry either. So, I mean, it's a rough job to be in because, I mean, you take it on all sides for, you know, being an abuser or exploiter or being an industry that people find morally bankrupt or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like it might take a long time, but if the constant battering ram happens, they'd never be able to get rid of everything, but they could certainly shut a lot of people who are, you know, doing stuff legit and legal and safe. They could certainly shut them down.
You know, I guess one of the questions, you know, you kind of touched on it and it brought up thoughts in my own mind that I just don't know that making it illegal and shoving it underground is necessarily the way to go about stopping violence against women.
Oh, I absolutely don't. It doesn't. It will completely backfire. I think it would completely backfire in the sense of the word that, you know, it would still get made. But, I, you know, it's like, I'm a consumer of porn. I watch it. I would much rather know that the film that I am watching was made, you know, in a legal industry where there are health checks and there are, you know, contracts and there are legal laws in place by, you know, people who know what they're doing. Then, you know, you turn on some random flick that could have been, you know, you don't know if the people are of age. You don't know where it was made or what conditions it was made in. And it's, you know, if they do, they think if the San Fernando Valley stops producing pornography, that it isn't going to be made, you know, in some very sketchy conditions in some very sketchy places where there's none of, you know, where there is no, you know, STD testing and medical checking and contracts and federal regulation, because it's still going to get made as long as it turns a profit. Which I think, as long as, you know, people are interested in sex, it will. Yeah, I think I'd much rather know I'm watching, you know, legally made, regulated stuff, and I'm sure as heck would much rather be performing in legally made, regulated stuff, you know?
Now, in terms of your presentation, where do you feel, what were you trying to achieve with reaching an audience?
I said at the beginning that if, you know, people already had their minds made up, I didn't think that I would change them. But I wanted to be there to say that, you know, this is one, you're getting one side of the story. And I'm going to tell you the other side and, you know, keep an open mind and kind of weigh them against each other. Yeah, I mean, people are going to form their own opinions one way or the other. But I think if you can't really make an informed choice or decision or feeling towards something without knowing both sides or you know, the, both sides of the argument or both sides of the issue. So I wanted to provide the other side of the issue because that is very rarely done. I mean, I think this is the only one of these things that has happened so far where there has been, you know, somebody involved with porn up there at the front of the room also speaking about it. I mean, I know there have been showings where there have been sex workers or pornographers or porn performers in the audience who then ask questions, but I think this is the first time they've done it where, you know, the presentation has included somebody who is involved in the industry.
Now, I'm thinking that one of the things that Jensen perhaps would ask is where you personally would draw the line on non-consenting participation, on bestiality, on child porn.
Well, I mean, my whole theory on that is, you know, child porn and bestiality are already illegal. They are already illegal, and they are not part of the mainstream industry, and or even, you know, most porn on the net that is not mainstream is not bestiality and child porn. It's not. I could say the first time that I've ever actually even seen anything that remotely resembles child porn was this virtual stuff that I had seen in this presentation, and I watch a lot of porn. You know, but I was asked about, you know, how do I feel about barely legal and content regulation and stuff like that. And it's a pretty well-known fact that I do not believe in content regulation. I may not choose to watch something, but I do not believe in regulating content. Barely legal, the whole theory being, you know, barely means, you know, she's over 18. And I'm sorry, having done, you know, I was shooting barely legal stuff when I was 32. Yeah, you put a woman in a cheerleader outfit, she's still a woman over 18. But it's just, I don't understand people who would want to watch child porn or bestiality, but that is already illegal. And, you know, people, especially child porn, a heavily prosecutable offense, heavily. You know, pedophilia and having possession of child pornography can land you in jail for a really long time. So I kind of think oftentimes that's a red herring that's thrown out there to draw away from what the actual truth of mainstream legally made pornography is.
Well, you know, I have wondered more than once about the direction where, you know, it's said, you know, if men see this, you know, that they see barely legal, that's going to convince them that the correct way to go is to you know, rape a teenager, you know, an underage teenager. And you know, I saw the movie Backdraft.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Backdraft with a boyfriend. He didn't turn into an arsonist.
Well, and see, I kind of almost think the thing with Barely Legal, sort of in a lot of ways, it goes the exact it's not that. It's the exact opposite sort of thing, where I think that a lot of guys who are, you know, watch porn, they remember having a crush on the captain of the cheerleaders back in the day. You know, and it's kind of like the reliving of that sort of a fantasy. And it's also, I mean, you have the girl dressed up, you know, like a cheerleader, but the guy is dressed up like a high school football player. I mean, that's a lot of the content is that whole reliving of the high school fantasies. And sure, you also do get, you know, the naughty professor and the naughty student, but that flips genders as often as anything else. A lot of times the naughty professor is a woman who is portrayed as being the older party, you know, and the 18-year-old stud, as opposed to the 18-year-old cheerleader and the professor. I think that kind of goes back more towards, you know, people kind of going through whatever sort of fantasies they might have had in their youth and having it put to film with, obviously, you know, people who have signed forms or are, you know, they're over the age of 18, they are adults, than the whole, oh, you know, we're encouraging you to have sex with children.
You know, I mean, there's a great deal of portrayal of, say, flight attendants in a certain light. And I don't know that if someone took all the flight attendants out of the movies, that would ever detract. There's a lot of men who have...
There's,
know,
flight attendant porn. There absolutely is, you know, the whole Mile High Club stuff, you know. I mean, there is. I think it's kind of like if you take a female profession or any sort of thing like that, or, you know, one that women do traditionally, whether it be nurse or flight attendant or, you know, whatever, even, you know, down to things that people remember, you know, girls did this as being, you know, cheerleaders or whatever, there's somebody out there that has a fantasy about it. And I don't think it makes. Even Bob himself said there are no studies that prove that, you know, porn increases rape.
Geez, I wonder if Melissa Farley could interview some of her friends.
Well, Gail Dines has said the same thing. She got, you know, caught saying the same thing. There are no good studies on this subject. And so, even though she stands up in her speeches and pretty much says absolutely that porn causes, you know, turns men into rapists, there's no scientific proof of any of that. I mean, for anybody finds kind of a, you know, half-cocked study that says that, there's one out there that says actually no, porn decreases rape. There's just no real hard fact science on either side of the issue, whether it increases or decreases it.
Well, you know, I think media images certainly can influence people, but the decision, you know, I mean, you if you see a commercial about Applebee's and you're hungry.
Yeah, then you might want to go eat. Yeah, you might not even go there, but you might want to go eat. And, I think that if I was going to say that one of the genuine criticisms that I hear with people out of porn that I think is the most believable is that it gives people, it can give people unrealistic body image ideas and unrealistic ideas about what, you know, sex in the bedroom between two people is generally going to be like. Those are the two things that I think might be legitimate concerns. But I also think that, you know, if you compare Jenna Jameson to, and her, you know, exposure to the world and how much she's seen and how she looks, to Tyra Banks or, you know, America's Next Top Model or all these supermodels, I can tell you that I think the supermodels have more of a negative impact on, you know, females and their body image than porn women do, because a lot of the women in porn are actually much more normal looking. You know, they're not all 5'9" and they're not all 110 pounds and perfect skin and all that kind of stuff. They look more like, you know, you can find everything. There's women in porn that run the gamut, you know, of shapes and sizes and colors and ages and all that sort of stuff. But I also think that, you know, you sit around and if you watch a lot of it, it's like, okay, the women are generally pretty attractive, and the guys are often, you know, very kind of athletic, studly looking guys that are you know, large penises or whatever, and they go at it like, you know, crazy for 45 minutes and nobody gets tired, nobody, you know, gets a leg cramp, there's no problems with, you know, the man firing early or the woman being suddenly like, oh geez, I'm done. So I could see where, you know, that could give people unrealistic expectations of what sex is supposed to be like, but I think, you know, that's more of a matter of, once again, our horrible sex education and people saying, you know, this is what I like, this is what I don't like, this is what I can and this is what I can't do, then, you know, oh, let's blame the porn for this.
7 minutes left. This is Brenneman Airplane on XXBN, Raleigh, Durham. My guest is Renegade Evolution. She's just back from Minnesota's Twin Cities, Augsburg College. I can't remember if Augsburg is in Minneapolis or St. Paul.
I believe it is in Minneapolis, and it is. This is what I thought was interesting: is it's a Lutheran school, but I kind of get the impression that while founded Lutheran, it's kind of become very liberal and progressive over the years. It's a nice school. I mean, nice campus. It's real pretty.
And I think you get the scenic view of the Metrodome.
You do actually. I was looking out at the Metrodome out of my hotel window all weekend. I went and took a picture of it and everything.
I still don't remember any place to park at the Metrodome.
It doesn't look like they have great parking. It's kind of strange. I think, well, everyone that I saw that was going to the college game that was happening there that night was taking buses and stuff. So maybe that's the way people get there.
Or in Minnesota, maybe they take it.
They ice skate? They snowshoe?
The ice
Who knows?
Skate.
Yeah.
6 minutes left. You can get a question in, 646-200-3136. 646-200-3136. What final thoughts do you have?
It was funny. I wasn't nervous about this whole thing. I wasn't. But I was kind of thinking that I might be in a room that was nothing but hostile territory. And it really wasn't, which was nice. It seemed to be there was a lot of people that were sort of more my leaning, or if not my leaning, you know, and like, I really like porn or whatnot. There was a lot of people there that were like, Well, it's not something that I watch personally. It's not something that I'd want to do. But I, you know, I absolutely think that there are people, women especially, who do it because they choose to do it, and they, you know, actually can enjoy doing it, or, you know, like their jobs or whatever, and think that it's more important to listen to the actual performers or whatever than people who, you know, write papers about them and what it must be like for them. That was nice. And I thought it was cool that, you know, when I mentioned that, you know, a lot of this stuff, especially like the BDSM stuff, is stuff that, you know, people do in their own bedroom, there were people nodding like, well, yes, that's true. So, you know, why demonize something that actually humans do? That was cool. And I might get to go back and do a speech again at one of the other colleges. So that's kind of neat, too. So overall, for me, I think it was definitely a positive experience. And it's funny, it wasn't like nearly as tense or hostile as I thought it might be. So that was good.
All right, let's hear your rendition of the Minnesota accent.
Oh, my favorite was the bartender talking about people going to the football game. And he's like, oh, you know, they're going to get their shine on and go to the game. I thought that was great. I'd never heard that expression, get their shine on. So I thought that was cool.
Have you seen Fargo, the movie?
Yes, I have. And I actually think that the Fargo accent was not thick enough.
That was my thought, too.
It was not quite the authentic, full-on Minnesota experience.
You really have to go heavy on the vowels.
Yes. When O's are really big. And, yeah, it was just, but the politest people on earth, I mean, we're sitting here making fun of their accents. I did not meet a single mean person the entire time I was there in Minnesota. Everyone was very, very nice.
They just really like the letter O. I don't know how else to.
It's one of those places that I would absolutely recommend for a vacation, but go, like, in the summer. Don't go in the winter, unless you really like cold weather. I mean, if you're from, you know, like, Saskatchewan or something, roll on down, you'll be fine. But I think for those of us that live in places that are warmer, not so much.
You know, I always found in Minnesota, it took me years to get by. You'd say something to somebody, and the O would be so heavy that you'd almost think something bad happened behind you. You know, you'd say something and be like, oh.
Right. You're looking around going, what?
Yeah. You know, did a dog just get hit by a car? Or, you know, it's like.
I'll also say that I didn't hear, like, well, with the exception of, you know, pretty much me, I didn't hear anybody swearing. Like, they don't swear in Minnesota. At least
no,
when I was,
right.
I did not hear a lot of, and I'm like, I went to shoot pool at a bar and nobody was swearing. You know, I was kind of impressed. It's completely not Brooklyn, let me put it that way.
Well, can you picture Walter Mondale swearing?
Only, like, if he dropped something heavy on his foot. Yeah, you know, then you might get, you know, you might get a small curse word out of him. But other than that.
You know, Mondale, Jesse Ventura, you can picture.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and that's another reason I thought, you know, they elected Ventura. I'm gonna like this state. So
Minnesota. 1 minute left. Any closing thoughts? This really went by fast.
Just that, you know, if anybody out there listening happens to be, you know, in porn or a sex worker or whatever, and you find out that this thing is coming to a town near you, see if you cannot get on the docket to be the opposing side, because I think that it is important for the opposing side to be there so people get, you know, both sides of the story instead of just one view that, you know, is the presented view in the movie and by the people presenting it. Because if you can make people think about it and question some of this stuff, that's good. It's, you know, it's a good thing, because otherwise it's just their view that you're going to see out there.
All right. I want to thank my guest, Renegade Evolution. Where is your website so people can find you?
It is Renegade Evolution at blogspot.com. So, actually, if you just Google Renegade Evolution, it will probably pop right up there.
All right.
That's the easiest way to find it.
Well, thank you for joining us on Brenneman Airplane tonight, Ren.
Absolutely. It was fun.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Likewise.
Lots of football.
Oh, yeah. Football tomorrow. Woohoo.
You know, it's the Lions, but this is XXBN Raleigh Durham. I am Jill Brenneman.
My friend, but